Welcome to the November 2012 session of the International Low Vision Support Group. I'm Dan Roberts, and our guests this month are Dr. Tracy Williams and Dr. Greg Pusateri from the Spectrios Institute in Wheaton, Illinois. Dr. Williams is the Executive Director of the Spectrios Institute for Low Vision in Wheaton. He is also a Clinical Associate Professor at Loyola University. Dr. Williams is a frequent national and international lecturer, well known for his comprehensive head, heart, and eyes approach to low vision rehabilitation, with his efforts to lift human spirits and advance independence for people with vision loss. Dr. Greg Pusateri is Dr. Williams' executive assistant at Spectrios Institute. He is an optometrist whose life changed when serious eye degeneration greatly impaired his vision. So he left the practice of optometry and went back to college to earn a Master of Divinity degree, serving as a minister in Wisconsin for 10 years. Along the way, he heard of a need at Spectrios Institute for an eye doctor who could work with patients and personally share their feelings. Using his medical and pastoral skills and his knowledge of low vision assistive technology, he's become a valuable member of Dr. Williams' staff. Welcome to our program, gentlemen.
Hey, Dan, it's great being with you again.
Hello, Dan.
It's good to have you both here with us. We're diverting from our normal presentation format this month by making this session more of a discussion about some of the important issues confronting those of us who are living with low vision. Before getting into some questions I have for you, doctors, you've chosen to call this session Limited Vision, Unlimited Potential. Those are inspiring words, but is our potential as visually impaired people really unlimited?
Absolutely, Dan. Boy, I can tell you, I almost hate to think about this, but I've been working in the low vision rehabilitation field for about 26 years plus. We see about 1,400 people a year here, about 350 students, K through 12th grade, and we see a lot of people that have very limited vision. But when it comes to their potential, oh my gosh. Why don't we just start with two quickies here. One is our board chairman, Peter Winfrey, who has Stargardt's macular dystrophy, a juvenile form of macular degeneration, just got his second hole-in-one. And how about this guy sitting right next to me, Dr. Greg Pusateri? And Greg, what is your sight?
Well, I have a cone rod dystrophy that's left me legally blind and with the direct center of my both eye, in both of my eyes, but I continue to play sports, do cabinetry, and especially I get to help people with low vision here at the Spectrios Institute.
He also is a graduate of optometry school, and he went through the seminary. So we really think that despite having limited vision, we've learned from our patient that there's unlimited potential.
That's a great answer, and that's kind of what I expected from you, Dr. Williams. We're aware of a recommended continuum of care for low vision patients. It involves evaluation, rehabilitation, psychosocial support, and disease management. Where does this journey along that continuum begin for people like us with vision loss?
I guess if you had a support group and you asked a bunch of people, where did their journey start with beginning to work through having a vision loss, many of them might say, I would think, Greg, that it started when they started seeing vision loss. And maybe it got really cemented down, so to speak, when they went to the eye doctor's office. And maybe for the first time had the confirmation of what their definitive diagnosis was. We're going to tell you what the cause or the etiology is. We're going to tell you what the prognosis is. Now, if everything is falling in place, Dan, the next thing, after all that's been done and a schedule of follow-ups from the medical perspective is lined up, the next thing, of course, is, well, how do I start my journey in learning how to make the most out of the vision loss? In other words, are there tools, glasses, technology? Is there a way to think? Is there a way to focus on developing skills? How can I not be defined by my vision loss, but be defined by my head and heart, who I am as a person?
Yeah, that's right, Dan. I would agree with Tracy. I know when I sat in that chair and the doctor gave that diagnosis, while I suspected that was the case, because this is a hereditary type of a thing, I was still stunned. And I had to, at that point, reevaluate, you know, what would I do, where would I go, and where would I get help. And it was in low vision rehabilitation that I found the tools that I needed to help me be successful and change gears, change careers, and move into ministry.
Well, I think, Dan, too, that the important thing is we want to make sure that this journey is one that's going to be a very rich one, one that's going to be lifelong, a growing one. I mean, when we think of the formula of life, you know, one, the support we get from our family and friends, and then education and the mentors that we meet there, and finally spiritual, if you have those three components in this journey, I think you have a very good chance of following the compass in the right way, and I think meeting the ultimate goals of a life filled with independence, dignity, and happiness.
And I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit more about that as we go along, because I know that is your mantra, Dr. Williams. Independence is probably defined by most people in our low vision community as their number one fear. And regaining our former independence can be difficult. I've learned that, and I'm sure Greg has learned that. What are some of the barriers that you find in your patients on the road back from that position?
Well, Dan, I think that's a good question. I mean, you know, there can be barriers along the way, or at least what we like to think of as barriers. People wonder, well, you know, will I be able to drive again? Will I be able to read again? I know that I had many of those questions run through my own mind, but I will tell you that when I switched from doctor to patient and I ended up sitting in the chair, having all of the new options presented to me as I looked through new types of glasses, spectacle-mounted telescopes, as I learned about computer programs that would help enhance magnification, or I used electronic technology, my spirits lifted. I became very excited because I realized at that point, you know, in spite of the fact that I might have limited vision, there was a bright future out there if I was willing to invest a little energy and keep pushing forward, not let any of those barriers weigh me down. So as far as I was concerned, yeah, limited vision, but unlimited potential.
Well, Dr. Pusateri, you exemplify the kind of patient that we all strive to be, a person who doesn't let it stop them. It doesn't put that block in their road, and if it is a block in the road, you take a detour. You go a direction in your life that you didn't expect to go, and you make a success out of it. So congratulations on what you've done with your life. In my role as a kind of a low-vision counselor, unofficially, I have the pleasure of meeting all kinds of personalities, from those that are successful as you are to those that aren't, and all the way from people who are positive and eager to learn to people who are just plain grumpy, I call them. Do you think people's attitudes and outlooks influence their success or their failure as a low-vision patient?
Dan, I think attitude is such an important component of the low vision rehabilitation journey. I think that all of us that have any sort of health setback, you would not be human if you didn't grieve. So first of all, I think our family, our friends, professionals must understand that anytime there's a loss, it is normal and I think healthy to grieve. But once the grieving process is over, the next step is to move ahead and to ask yourself, how can I be the best person that I can be? After all, I'm still here on Earth. It might be that I have kids, grandkids, you know, a wife. I enjoyed playing golf or singing in a choir or whatever it is. You cannot let a lot of negative thoughts really, I think, get into your brain. But I think at first, it's a very common barrier, and that's why we like lots of people going through the low vision process to bring a significant other, what we've called a coach at times. So I think attitude might be one of the most important components and most challenging one, because I think you can talk yourself out of a lot of things. You can say, for example, I don't have the money to go through low vision rehabilitation. I don't have the time to go through it. I don't want to impose on my family or friends because I'm going to need transportation. Ah, well, I'm old enough. I've had a good enough life. There's no need for me to try to advance with this vision loss. And I think that if you don't stop a second and say to yourself, now, wait a minute, I only have so much energy in this body, and what I need to do is not let that energy go into the buckets of anger, depression, and frustration. I think I'll be a happier person if I can direct that energy towards fruitful endeavors, one that will make me, for example, a good example as the patriarch or the matriarch of the family, one that will allow me to be a caregiver if I need to be one, one that will allow me to be employed despite sometimes overwhelming odds for people to be unemployed with vision loss. And I think most importantly, not to succumb to depression. So I think that you must try your best to say, I'm going to stick with it, I'm going to go down this path, and I will be successful.
Well, you've given me, again, validation as to why I've always thought Spectrios Institute is known as one of the top rehabilitation agencies in the United States, if not the world. And the key to the success there is that it provides a kind of a one-stop shop for the patient. I'd like to ask Dr. Pusateri about this. What do you see as a new person on the staff there as the benefits of working in a situation such as the Spectrios Institute has set up there, a multidisciplinary setting for low vision rehabilitation?
Well, Dan, I have to tell you, I'm excited about being here at Spectrios, but I'm excited about the field of low vision rehabilitation in general because of the new technology that's out there. You know, I am a person who, you know, as you said, I'm a pretty persistent person. I'm not going to let barriers get in the way. And you know, when you take that mindset and you remain optimistic and you let the people that are experts in this field show you what's there, it's an exciting thing. I will tell you that, you know, with regard to technology, I use an iPad, an Apple iPad. It's one of the greatest inventions of all time for people who have vision impairment. This has changed my world. I am able to function in a much higher level. I can read my emails. I can read books. I can communicate with people. I can use it as a GPS unit to find out where I'm at. There's just a whole myriad of things that you're able to do. And working here at Spectrios, you know, has helped introduce me to so many different things. I'm excited. So again, unlimited potential.
You know, I think, Dan, too, the great thing is when you have staff that have the different credentials where you truly can address counseling needs, when you have a support group, for example, when you have doctors who are residency trained in low vision, when you work with rehabilitation teachers that have their master's degree in rehabilitation, when you work with occupational therapists, O&M instructors, and when you have certified staff in assistive and adaptive technology, oh my gosh, again, the opportunities can really be unlimited. And I think, too, in the setting we've been very fortunate to work in here for 26 years, we've been very fortunate as a 501c3 or a non-for-profit to be able to acquire different grants and funding so that people will not be turned away. They will have the chance to try, you know, try new things, acquire the knowledge and the training and the tools so they can pursue those activities of daily living that they want to do.
And then when they get there to the rehabilitation service, such as at Spectrios, you have the tools. You have the tools in place. When I was a kid, I was always trying to create things out of wood. And when I couldn't figure out a way to get the wood to cooperate, my dad always knew exactly what tool would help me. And he always seemed to have it in his toolbox. Do you have a toolbox? And if you do, what tools have you found that have worked best for you?
Yeah, Dan, that's a great idea. It's a great analogy because actually I love tools. I carry a little bag with me that inside I keep a monocular telescope. I keep sun filters that are gray, they're polarized, they're wraparound so it blocks light from the side so that I can see things better without having glare issues. I have an ID, white cane, that I keep with me, so if I'm going to be in an area where I'm not sure, or there's a high traffic area. I learned the hard way. I went to step off a curb one time and didn't see any cars coming, and yet one went flying around me, and I realized, you know, I know that I don't see well, but I need to let others know. And so from then on, I take that white cane with me to let drivers or other people around me know that I don't see well. So I carry that. I carry a handheld magnification. I have one that's illuminated. I always have one in my pocket. I also have a pair of bioptic glasses, which are glasses that have a telescope mounted on them so I can see things in the distance a little bit more clearly so I can spot signs and things that I may need to navigate with. So, there's a lot of things. And then, of course, as I said before, I have my iPad. That's a wonderful, wonderful invention, just like the iPhone and the new Android phones have much better accessibility software. So, you know, it's a bright future out there for those with vision impairment.
I think, too, Dan, that what we're seeing is more and more growth and excitement in the assistive and adaptive technology area, as Greg was saying. I tell you that I'm amazed. I have a patient now that has macular degeneration, very bright man. He went to Cornell. He got his MBA from Stanford. He was a tank commander for a while. But unfortunately, macular degeneration struck. On the journey, he felt many of the things we've been talking about. I mean, he did feel very down. He was sometimes very frustrated because he would go to the retinal specialist, and while they were doing their level best to help them, there was nothing that they could do more for him medically except have him come back for follow-up every 3 to 6 months. He was a very resourceful guy, and he started, like you, to go hunting around the internet and found out more about low vision rehabilitation. Well, he got himself hooked up, actually here, and what happened was he just started to blossom. He has his own cockpit, as he calls it, so he has an area at his house with all kinds of technology, big flat screen, scanning devices, all kinds of different gee whiz devices, so to speak, so he can once again feel like he's in the mainstream of society. So I think sometimes you do need that professional help. You need sometimes that family and friends support. You need the grace of God. But you need to believe in yourself. And you have to say, I can do better. I can learn more. And I'm going to travel down this path. And so, as we say, limited vision, unlimited potential.
Absolutely. And all it takes is somebody like you and Dr. Pusateri and the other outstanding rehab specialists and OTs and people like that I've met over the years who have that enthusiasm and who are wanting to pass that along to all of us, and it is contagious. It can be done. I'd love to go on forever here. There's so much we could be talking about, and you guys are terrific. But I'm going to have to wrap this up. I do have one big question for you that I'd like both of you to answer. Earlier we talked about fear of the unknown. The future is unknown. But do you see any reason why we should fear it? Can both of you look into your crystal balls and predict for us what the future looks like? Can you specifically give us something that we can pin our hopes on?
Okay, I've got my crystal ball out here. the first thing that I'm seeing is the advancements that are happening so rapidly in technology on both the medical and the low vision side are truly amazing. I think medicine, which for the most part has been reactive, in other words, you're ill and we react to that, I think the future is all about being proactive. Well, let's see what your genotype is like. Let's see what the future might be looking at genetics. And how can we re-engineer those genes? Are there actually good viruses that can go and change the DNA and protein in cells to make them better visual cells? And then how about on the synthetic side? Not just making cells, let's say, but there might be ways that we can come up with synthetic parts. I mean, first of all, when we talk about cells, we hear all the time about stem cells. I think there's a lot of advancement coming on there. But we're also trying to see, are there ways that we can come up with vision acquired in a different way? And so I think that there's much more focus and attention on this right now. And I think even with some of the advances we've seen with these injections for people with wet macular degeneration, they're not a cure, but they're holding any advancement of the macular degeneration back. And what that means, Dan, is that these people are better low vision candidates. In other words, they have more parts in their anatomy that we can work with low vision devices and technology. So we are seeing here a lot of good things, but I also think that people understanding that the psychosocial implications of vision loss, we need a kinder world. We need people to understand that people aren't always totally blind, that sometimes they have some vision loss, but enough to affect function. And I think we have to be a compassionate people that says to themselves, how do we advance people with vision loss? So I think it's a cultural thing. I think it's a scientific thing. But it does begin at home, as they say. Greg, it begins at home. So how did it begin in your home?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, you talk about the future and what does that look like. You know, it did begin for me at home. You know, a lot of times when we talk with patients, we also try to help them understand if they have a vision degeneration that, you know what, in some respects, they might be kind of the pioneer. They're the patriarch or the matriarch that's going to help set the course for the rest of the family. They're watching to see how do they react. You know, what's going to happen? Are they gonna just curl up and give up, or are they gonna press on? And I was fortunate that I have a father who has this. He's now blind from the same degeneration, but he has never quit. In fact, he taught us all that, you know, you're gonna have barriers in life. You have a decision to make. You can either quit, which he always said is never a decision, or you can figure out a way to go over it, under it, around it, or through it. But you keep pushing forward. And I see this field as a great opportunity. You know, Tracy really kind of pioneered a new idea as well when he brought me on here with the intention of having someone bring in the spiritual aspect. You know, obviously as a minister, I'm a man of faith. And, you know, Dan, in the book of Romans, I'm just going to read you just two verses here real quick because I think it applies to all of us who have vision loss. And I think that this is really the key when people are struggling, if they would stop and think about this. In Romans 5, chapter 5, verses 3 and 4, it says, "Not only so, but we also rejoice in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope." And you know, when people have their faith, they know that God presents new things and new opportunities, regardless of what happens. And I see low vision rehab as one of the greatest blessings that I've found in my life. And I know that if people give that the opportunity, it can transform their life into one that, again, as I've said over and over, will have unlimited potential.
We are so thankful, too, to you, Dan, and all the people that work with you and support you, that you have advanced this culture that we're talking about. And we are so happy to be a part of what your mission is, and we certainly wish you the very best.
Well, thank you for that. You both are a blessing to the field, and you are the inspiration for a lot of us who do continue in this. And so thank you for that. I can't even summarize what you spoke about today because you said it all. And so I'm so glad that you both could join us today. I'm very glad that Dr. Pusateri is now adding that extra element of faith, and because that's so much a part of many of our lives as elder seniors. We tend to, I think the younger people have lost some of that, but we still hang on to that for our hope, because a lot of us are, not me, I'm still a young senior, but a lot of our elder seniors, all they have left is the hope. Because they don't have a lot of years left to wait for clinical trials and that kind of thing to finish. And they had the thing that Dr. Pusateri mentioned about, it may not be for us, but we are the pioneers. And so we're making it easier. We're paving the road for those who follow us. And I think if we just hang on to that thought, I think that's where our hope will come from. So that's the end of my sermon. And once again, I want to thank you both very much for coming in today. I know this is going to have a big influence on a lot of people, and you're going to be heard. Thank you again, Dr. Tracy Williams and Dr. Greg Pusateri from the Spectrios Institute for Low Vision in Wheaton, Illinois. We appreciate your help with our presentation, and we look forward to having you back again soon.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you very much, Dan. Give a call anytime, anybody.